show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we have more baseball things to talk about, and that's why we're here. That is what we do. So if you are hoping to hear baseball things, you came to the right place. But before we get into those introductions, I, of course, am Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, on this tornado-threatening night is a man who comes through like a tornado whenever he comes through anywhere, I guess, himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this evening? Hopefully ready to stand in a doorway. Or that's an earthquake, I guess, right? I don't know if that's a...
yeah.
The bathtub, I don't
know. Yep. I think bathtub works. I don't know.
You don't have a basement.
I've got a closet. I don't know. I'm in a second floor apartment, so if anything happens, I'll be in the closet on the first floor little landing. So, no, I'm good. I'm keeping an eye on the weather. I'm not the biggest fan of storms and stuff. I think people who are a little bit crazy, but power to them. But so far, it's not doing anything. So we're going to see how far we get. And then if the weather interrupts us, well, you won't know because of the power of audio editors. You'll never guess.
It's true.
Actually, you probably will. You'll probably be able to tell where we cut out.
Yeah. There could have been an hour gap in between you just saying that and me now because of weather, and you wouldn't have known.
Yeah. Exactly.
But anyway.
It's true.
Here we are. And here the Royals are, and, you know, they've put together some wins. How about this, huh? So.
Yeah, two in a row.
Yes.
Even.
Some would call that a streak. I always think of that that scene in Major League where Lou Brown's like, we won today. If we win tomorrow, that's called a winning streak.
That's pretty much where they're angling
That's about all they got. But they not only did they won the two, and then they won three out of four. I mean, at one point, so we'll call it the lowest point so far this season. they were 5-20. Right? We talked last week, if you recall, that if the Royals were not careful, they would get off to a worse start record-wise. And that 2005 team, that was the worst team in Royals history. That team started off 7-23, and the Royals could have possibly, from where they were last week when we recorded, it was very feasible for them to go. I think it would have been 1-7 to get to 6-24. And they lost three straight right after that. They were down to 5-20. It was actually looking like they might be in that, be angling towards that worst 30-game start ever, but they pulled it off, and they ensured as of yesterday that they would not be doing that. They played an absolutely bonkers game yesterday that went 13 innings against the Boston Red Sox, one of the best teams in baseball right now this season. The Royals, in classic Royals fashion, did everything they possibly could to lose the game and then actually didn't. So pretty interesting. They had the lead and they lost the lead, and then they tied it up, and then they took Jorge Soler hit a 3-run home run in the 13th inning, and then they gave up. And so they had a 3-run lead, and then they gave up two runs in the bottom of that inning before finally eclipsing the Boston Red Sox and getting that victory. to get their eighth win of the season, ensuring, guaranteeing they would have a better start than the 2005 team, which I'm sure was on everyone's mind in the clubhouse that night as they popped their champagne. But they lost today, so you know that team again was 7-23. The Royals are 8-22 now this year.
All right,
30 games, so not the worst start ever. But
got them beat. Got them.
It's still, unfortunately, not good. But you know, signs of life. So they've been, you know, 3-2 out of their last five games, still looking for that elusive series victory, but they've been able to put together some wins. So that's good. And, you know, some things are kind of starting to come around here for them. They've got, you know, mainly we'll start with the big one. I already mentioned Jorge Soler hit that three-run home run in the 13th last night, and he has absolutely been killing it so far this season and definitely deserves mention. I mean, you know, we've talked about on this show before how, you know, 40 games is kind of that mark where you can not necessarily judge how good, how well a player is doing, you know, but where you can start to take notice and say, okay, at this point, at least what they're doing is more for, it's not fluky, you know, maybe it doesn't mean they're going to have a, you know, fantastic season, but to this point, that's a good level of consistency to be able to keep it up for that length of time. So we're not quite there yet at 30 games, but we're pretty close. And given, you know, Soler's issues in the past, it's actually really good, really encouraging to see where he's at. He's currently hitting 306, 434, with a 434 on base with a 494 slug percentage, three home runs, nine RBIs. I mean, he's looking great. He's, you know, and if you break down the splits, it's even better. Talking about his last 2 weeks, he's been hitting in 350 with an 1100 OPS. His last week, he's hit over 400 in, let's see, he has 27 plate appearances in the last seven games, and he's hit over 400 with a 1200 OPS. So, I mean, he's really starting to heat up. And that could not be more encouraging. It's just so good to see because, you know, again, I'm not trying to say he's going to just break out, but, you know, you mentioned it last week, Mike, that there was kind of some the feeling both on or on Royals Twitter about how, you know, this he could be nearing that breakout point. And again, you know, not to say it's going to happen. Everyone, you know, it could just be a hot couple weeks or so, but it's really encouraging. I'm really liking what we've been seeing from Jorge Soler in the last week or two. You've been feeling the same as I am.
Yeah, I mean, I texted. I have an old roommate who's a big Cubs fan, and I finally had to. I just sent him a text yesterday. I was like, I think Jorge Soler is finally good because. You just look at what, I mean, he started 0-11 this year, too. So to look at his slash line overall and where he's at now in light of that is kind of remarkable. I mean, he didn't get a hit for his first four games. And ever since, that's kind of all he's done is he's getting hits, he's getting walks, he's got nine doubles. You know, he's got, you know, three doubles and a homer in his last two games. He's just playing great baseball right now. I think some things that might change, the pitchers are probably going to start adjusting to him a little bit. And maybe they already have, and maybe he's adjusted quickly. But they've thrown him a lot of off-speed stuff, a lot of breaking stuff, and stuff that they're trying to get him to chase. I think that's a decent chunk of why he's walked so much. But we've also seen him, just watching him. You know, he's in a 3-2 count, like, all the time.
Yeah, we mentioned that last week. We were talking about that.
Yeah. He's in it a 3-2 count like 90% of the time. And you're going to walk a lot of the time in those kind of situations. So it might even be that pitchers start to try to throw him some fastballs a little bit more. And we know he can hit a fastball. The home run last night was on a curveball, you know, about 77, 78 miles an hour or something like that. And he got a little golf, and I think he got helped because it was Fenway and left field is short. But, I mean, it was a moonshot. And he had a couple doubles today, and, you know, he's just he's doing everything with the bat that you had hoped he might. And really, then some. I mean, we kind of expected him to be this high strikeout, high power guy with some variance in the batting average that would be balanced a little bit by walks. But he's hitting over 300, you know, by, after today's game. So, I mean, that's solid. That's a good player. Yeah. Now, is he going to do that the rest of the year? Maybe, probably not. But he's shown what he can do over basically like 3 weeks in the big leagues, and that's definitely encouraging.
Yeah, you know, and he's, I think to your point, he's just kind of, for lack of a better term, he's just looking crisp, you know? I mean, he's, when he's making contact, he's making good contact, he's putting the barrel on the ball, looks confident up at the plate, he's having good plate appearances, seeing lots of pitches, you know, and it was one of the things, too, where I think it was kind of, and we talked about this last week as well, about the kind of being a three true outcome type of a guy, because, you know, even though he had the reputation tendency to strike out a lot, you know, it was still kind of thought that he would still have, you know, still catch a few walks and have a pretty decent approach, even though he'd be caught kind of fishing for stuff a lot. And it seems like, you know, he's maybe even cut down on that a little bit. And if that's something he's grown into, then, I mean, that could turn him into a really powerful hitter. Not necessarily meaning lots of home runs, but just in the just overall. And it's really encouraging to see. I'm really, I'm excited to see how this develops, you know, and that's kind of as we've talked about leading up to the season. And now as the Royals have gotten off to a not very good start, that's one of the things that we were kind of saying, well, let's hope we have some exciting stuff to watch. And there hasn't been a ton yet, but seeing Jorge Soler emerge in the last couple weeks after his, like you said, 0-11 start, where everyone was just like, man, what a waste to give up Wade Davis for this. But, you know, he's looking pretty good right now. And if, like you said, is he going to hit, you know, 300 with a 950 OPS all season? Probably not. But if he, you know, if he hits 265 with an 850 OPS and ends up hitting, you know, 20, 25 home runs, like, all right, I'll take that. I'll take three more years of that, since the Royals have him for that, you know, for that long. Is it three more years or is it two more years? I can't remember. It's three more years.
He'll be a free agent after 2021, so they've got three more full seasons after this one because of just the way service time worked out. I mean, he spent so much time in the minors last year just getting right, and they never, you know, Bonifacio was up, and he was hitting well, and then Melky Cabrera came over, and he was in Melky Cabrera, and, you know, they didn't really have a spot or a need to bring in Soler. And even in September, they didn't really use him. So he was on the roster, but he got, like, what, six at-bats? So I think they just didn't want to, like, give him another jolt of failure to go into the offseason. So they just kind of let him sit around and be around the team. So, yeah, I mean, I think if he can go through, and even if he's kind of the norm of what you expect, if he just hits, like, Jorge Bonifacio last year, the rest of this year, with maybe more walks, that's totally fine. I mean, you're looking at a guy who's probably, yeah, about 20 homers, you know, gets on base 360 clip or so. You hit 265 plus whatever he's done, so he probably ends up around 270, 275. That's a really good year.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to seeing how that goes. Hopefully he stays healthy just so that he can continue to kind of get that work and kind of, you know, see what it's like to be on a big league roster and having success for a full season, because that's just something he hasn't done yet. You know, he never did that with the Cubs, not necessarily because he wasn't playing well enough, but because, you know, Joe Maddon had enough players that he didn't have to, you know, play some of those younger guys every single day. He would mix and match, and you know, Soler didn't really become an everyday player. And last year he had his issues. He had injury issues in the past. So, you know, this could be a really big opportunity for him. And so far he's taken advantage of it. And it's really cool to see, because he's one of those guys who's going to be here after the next couple of years. So really, really cool, encouraging. And hopefully it's a story we're still talking about every month through, you know, the rest of the season. Hopefully he's an all-star, you know? I mean, I think that'd be really cool to get him on an all-star team. You know, after the way that his first season ended up going, and in light of it being such a high-profile trade that brought him over in the first place.
Yeah, I completely agree. And
not that it matters, but, you know, you sure do want to see your guys do well if you've traded someone notable for them. So,
yeah, because,
you know, that's always a perk of fandom.
And, you know, that was a trade where however much of a difference it would have made that season to still have Wade Davis for the rest of the year, you know, who knows? The Royals, you know, they were in the playoff race for a lot of the season, but didn't end up finishing all that close to it. But, you know, that was a move, even at the time, that was geared towards the future. So seeing some positive signs towards that future is a great thing. And like you said, anytime you give up somebody, you like to get something in return, you know. And everyone always talks with trades, winners and losers, and, you know, who won the trade and did somebody get screwed, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, the idea of a trade is for both teams to come out well on the deal. You know, I mean, when you look back at the James Shields trade, right? You know, the Royals got James Shields, who helped him to a World Series, and Wade Davis, who helped him to two and won a World Series. And the Rays got Will Myers, who, you know, was a Rookie of the Year, and that they traded and got some assets for, and they got Jake Odorizzi. So, you know, there is – both teams came out pretty well on that deal. That's okay. So, you know, this – You want that for this deal as well, where the Cubs got some good use out of Wade Davis, and they needed him more urgently that year than the Royals did, and hopefully, you know, the Royals can get a few good years out of Jorge Soler, because they're in rebuilding mode now, and if this thing is to turn around more quickly than it did last time. You know, last time, I'm thinking basically from when Dayton Moore arrived. So, you know, Seven, 8 years. If they wanted to turn around a little bit more quickly than that, then Jorge Soler is going to have to be a big piece of that. So if he turns out to be that, then that would be fantastic, you know. And then it'll just be fun to watch to see a young star develop if he does, in fact, become that. Because he's always had that potential, even when he was with the Cubs. So, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic right now. Really, it's a fun, definitely the most fun story going on with the Royals right now. And another similar one that isn't, you know, I don't know if it's quite as fun, but still a fun one that we've that's also developed in about the same time frame, really. But since coming back from injury, Alex Gordon has come back, and he's actually been hitting well. So not quite as well as Soler, but actually pretty close. So when you look at what he's done in the last week, right? I pulled up his splits here. So we'll just go the last 2 weeks, which is only the last 9 games since he's been back. He's hit .314 with a .385 on base and a .457 slug, and he's got he also hit a home run last night to tie the game in the ninth. Shades of World Series Alex Gordon coming back. So
and off Kimbrel.
Yes. So what a
97 mile per hour fastball. Yeah.
He barreled it. So
yeah, I mean, he ripped it. It was lovely.
Yes.
So nice.
And, you know, he's feeling kind of similar to Jorge Soler. He said he came back and he's made some tweaks to his approach. And actually I was listening to 810 this morning, and I heard Mike Boddicker on there. And he was talking about how he noticed it when Alex Gordon came back, how his stance looked a little bit different. And, you know, I'm not as trained, not as good at noticing some of those things as a lot of those people are, but you know, that was kind of the consensus, and that's exactly, you know, that's what he said, even he being Alex Gordon. So looks like he's made some changes. Hopefully they're continue to be for the better. And he's been hitting the ball. He's been hitting it solid. He's been having good at bats. He's looking more like that 2011 to 2015 Alex Gordon than he is looking like the last. But granted, super small sample size, very, very hard right. to make any sort of extrapolation towards the whole season. But when you're 8-22, you try and find encouraging signs, encouraging things to talk about or to look at and to look positively moving forward. And Alex Gordon has been one of those the last week and a half or so, including last night. Both he and Jorge Soler kind of carrying the team offensively. And again, that's another super encouraging thing to see, you know, because Alex Gordon, we've talked about the prospect of him being DFA'd if it really came to that, and how tough that would be for Dayton Moore and the organization, and how none of us want to see that. So if he could take this momentum from the last 9 games, and you know he's fully back and he's healthy and he's confident with his approach and he's you know tweaked things to where he feels good up there at the plate and he can just ride this and keep moving with it, then I am here for that. I'm definitely excited to see some signs of life from Alex Gordon. It's funny. I heard an exchange from the post-game interview with Ned Yost, where Rustin Dodd, who's the writing for The Athletic now, asked him, you know, was it something to the effect of, was it good to see that Gordon still had that in him, you know, shades of the 2015 World Series, et cetera. And classic Ned Yost fashion, of course, his response was, I don't need to see him to hit a home run to know he's still got it in him. So,
like, duh, yeah, what do you think?
Well, come on, of course. I always knew. I knew this whole time. Just like he knew Mike Moustakas would be an all-star. Now, he did turn out to be right, but...
He was right.
but it was... For a long time, it didn't look like he was. So, right. Anyway, that's... I thought that was a funny exchange. But to the point, it's another one of those, you know... We're looking for encouraging signs for this team. That's one of them. And Soler and Gordon heating up has been part of what's had them win, you know, 3 out of 4 and 3 out of their last 5 and avoid being the worst start in Royals history. So, you know, we talked about Soler, but seeing Gordon is almost just as encouraging. And it's good to see as a Royals fan. You want to, however he goes out for this organization over the next couple of years, you want it to be on a high note. You don't want it to be like something of him getting DFA'd.
Yeah. I mean, and that would just be tough. I guess if they have to get to that point, you know, we've talked about it. Yeah, they would probably go ahead and do it, painful as it might be. But even better is to see him hit and see him come out and play kind of like the guy that, you know, we thought he would always be. And, you know, right now he is looking good. In the last, since he came back from injury, he's got 5 games with multiple hits. You know, he's got a couple of doubles. He had a big double in that Sunday after that second game of the doubleheader on Saturday. You know, that was a big thing to see. I mean, it was a ball that he drove into right field. And then, you know, last night he hits that home run. And, you know, you just kind of see him continue to hit. And if he does that, you know, that's going to go a long way to kind of, you know, maybe I don't need to worry about, like, how he's remembered because, you know, I'm just a fan. But, you know, I really do think that the Alex Gordon story is a big, big part and almost like a symbol of everything about how the Royals have come back into relevance over the last, you know, over the Dayton Moore era because... You know, you've got these expectations, they don't necessarily happen, and then they finally kind of, you know, reinvent some things, and they jump back out, and now they're successful. And it's like, you know, it's kind of the same kind of thing. But even more so, I'm just a fan of Alex Gordon. I want to see him play well, and I want to see him go down in Royals history as someone who left playing well and not someone who had a string of seasons where he hit 210 and got... you know, designated for assignment and just kind of left out there and was nothing more than a left field defensive replacement. Like, I don't want to see that. So to see him kind of get around on some fastballs, you know, it's not just that he's been successful. It's that he's actually kind of done it by doing some of the things that it looked like he couldn't do, like hit, you know, a high velocity fastball. He's doing that. And maybe it's only a 2-week sample size. Okay, well, sure. But we also see that it's still in him. So it gives me hope as an Alex Gordon fan. It's also kind of remarkable in that, you know, he came back so quickly from what I think a lot of people assumed was going to be a much, much longer injury. I mean, he was gone for, you know, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on a torn part of his body. I mean, that's crazy. And for him to come back and actually, you know, not try to get up to speed, but, like, hit the gas. Like, he's hitting well. I think that's really cool. And if he can continue to do that, if maybe that's the thing that wakes him back up, I think that's great. And, you know, this last week we talked about find the moments, find those kind of stories, find the things to follow that you can see that are interesting. That would be one of them. Alex Gordon coming back into relevance just when you thought that, you know, he was done. I think that'd be a great story. I think that's something to definitely watch. You know, for the rest, you know, for this month, for this time period, for as long as it lasts, and maybe it carries over through the rest of the season. So it's good to see. I hope he can hit a little bit with a little bit more power, get some more extra base hits, because, you know, his slug's still a little bit low. But, I mean, if he's swinging the bat well and if he's catching up to 95-mile-an-hour fastballs, some of that will follow. So hopefully whatever adjustments he's made continue and they continue to work for him and give him some confidence. And, you know, maybe he can make the last 2 years of this contract look a lot better than they looked back in March, because it looked like a miserable deal.
Yes.
At that point.
Yes, it did.
It looked like $40 million on, like, not much.
Yeah.
So if they can get anything, that'd be great.
Absolutely. So, and, you know,
really cool to see, you know, what he's able to do for the, you know, this month and on.
Absolutely. So let's hope it continues for both Alex Gordon and Jorge Soler. And, you know, maybe they can salvage a little bit of something from this season and avoid being gunning for that number one draft spot in next year's draft. Let's hope, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if they got it, I mean,
yeah, you know, it's nothing bad.
It's a nice consolation, but it's like, can
get somebody good. It's always, it's so dependent on the year. It's so kind of crazy. Like, you know, Royals, because, I mean, who was it, like, because who was number one in 2005? Evan Longoria?
In 2005, it was Justin Upton.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And then, you know, 2006, the Royals take Luke Hochaver. And then, who was 2007?
2007 was, let's see, I'm trying to, who did they, 2007 was the Moose draft. So
he was second
overall. And who was first was, should know that.
Yeah. But, like, you know, you get
can't think of it.
You get,
but yeah.
I think
I guess that we can't pick it out. Maybe,
yeah.
You know, maybe that.
But then you've got, you know, years like 2009, where it was Bryce Harper was your number one overall,
right.
And, you know, if it's a year like that where it's a slam dunk, or, you know, 2010 when Manny Machado was drafted, you know, I mean, you know, or you've got Garrett Cole or somebody, you know. When you've got those kind of almost no brainer like picks, like that's great,
right.
But it's so dependent on the year. So I always think of, you know, in the NFL, you know, there were years where the number one overall draft pick was a team that went like 4-12, right? Which was bad, but, you know, for a number one pick, that's a, or for a team that gets the number one pick, that's a pretty good record, better than you normally see. But then, you know, you had 1 year with the Chiefs where they went 2-14 and they picked third because it just so happened to be the year that the Detroit Lions literally did not win a game. So, and then the Chiefs went 2-14 again a few years later and they get the number one pick, but there's nobody there to pick. So they end up with Eric Fisher. So these things are so dependent. So, you know, I mean, it's obviously if you have the first pick, then, you know, nobody else can stop you from picking who you want, but it's just, it is the person you want and the person that's there that year going to be good. But anyway, that's a long ways away.
I looked up to remind myself of 2007 to see who the first overall pick was, and I have to laugh.
Okay.
Because you know who it is.
I do. Oh, is it David Price? Oh, yeah, I was thinking he was 2008. Why was it? That's because the Rays made the World Series in 2008. That's why.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why that escaped my memory, but.
And then wasn't that the year that?
That was the Tim Beckham year.
Okay.
In 2008. And so it was Beckham, Alvarez, and Hosmer was in 2008.
Okay. Well, but then 2006, or, you know, that decided the 2007 draft order, wasn't it because the Royals picked second and got Moustakas? So wasn't it something where, like, Alex Gordon hit a home run in a meaningless game to win in, like, August or something? Maybe it wasn't Alex Gordon, but somebody in August or something. And that game was the difference between the number one overall. Was that season for that draft? Or am I thinking of something else?
I recall it ending up being a year where the Royals beat the Orioles, and that ended up being the difference between the third and fourth in 2010.
Okay, yeah, because that was...
Which is the difference between Manny Machado and Christian Cologne.
Yeah, that's what it was. Okay.
I appreciate what Christian Cologne did in the 2014 wild card game and what he did in the 2015 World Series in Game 5.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Great Thank for you. Him. I'd rather have Manny Machado.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's how it goes.
That is how the cookie crumbles, as they say.
Yep. And that illustrates the point. It's like there are some drafts where you can go as deep as five and find a guy that you like, or even, you know, six, seven, or eight. And then there are some years where there's three marquee players and the rest, you know, you just have questions about. And that's kind of how it worked out for the Royals in a lot of these cases. You know, so if they get the first overall pick, I mean, I think there's a lot of talent, but it also seems like every year everybody says that it's the deepest draft in years. So, you know, what counts? What really matches up with reality there? I don't know. So, I'd rather the Royals not finish with the worst record in baseball, but if they do get number one, it's a nice compensation, and, you know, at least it puts them in a position where, like you said, they can choose whoever they want. Now it just depends on, you know, who might actually be that number one guy, which I would follow Clint Scholes on Twitter, because he will keep you up to date on all
draft
things.
Yes, he definitely will.
Let's mix in a plug for him and the work Indeed. He does while we're doing this. But, yeah, I don't know. I'd just rather see the Royals play better.
And we'll have plenty of time to discuss that.
The draft is only like 6
That's
weeks
true.
Away, though, give or take. So,
but I guess where they'll pick in next year's draft based on this season, we'll have even more time to talk about that.
Still got way too much time.
some other happenings with the Royals recently. So Clay Buchholz was released, which, you know, given his acquisition, like, not that I agreed, you know, I'm not upset or anything, but it was a little bit surprising because it seemed like all signs were pointing to him making at least a few starts in the near future if the Royals continued to struggle and he was pitching well enough in AAA. So, but he got the boot and coming off the DL, Bubba Starling, Adalberto Mondesi back into Omaha. See what happens with those two. You know, hopefully Mondesi can get on track soon. And, you know, maybe if he can get into a point where the Royals you know, forcing the Royals' hand because he's playing so well by maybe the All-Star break or something, you know, that's a good place to be in if they were able to bring him up, depending on, you know, where what the Royals' situation is at that time at the major league level. So, you know, not a ton stuff. Kyle Loesch started for Omaha today, so yeah, that's something, I guess.
That doesn't get your toes a tapping.
I don't know what
will.
You know. Welcome to baseball, folks. Now it's official. But
and they say baseball's boring. Kyle Loesch disagrees.
Loesch disagrees.
Took like 2 years off too, so
it happened. Right.
Interesting.
You know. Another thing, kind of Royals related, but not, you know, off the field. Sort of the Royals have they announced they will no longer be having KC, right? The W guy.
The W guy.
That would hang the big W on the Royals Hall of Fame after each win at home. He will no longer be a part of the organization, I believe is how it was worded, more or less. So I think the Royals anticipated him sitting around not doing anything for the majority of the games at home, meaning they didn't anticipate the Royals would win that many games at home. So yeah, they decided to cut their losses in anticipation of their losses. So as opposed to paying someone to just sit there, they just said, hey, thanks for your time.
I think it's funny that it took until May to find that out.
Yeah, right.
They'd only had like one win at home. I think he was an employee of the museum because he was always dressed up in like the vintage mm-hmm. outfit. And he'd been doing that prior to doing the W thing, which they didn't start that until, what, 2014? Yeah. So, you know, okay. But still, you know.
Because was it one of those things they did for one of those retro nights and then people loved it, so they just kind of kept doing it? I feel like it was.
The W thing? Or his outfit or what?
The W thing. Because like
they just started it because they decided we're going to start it.
It was like the
there's like we're going to do a thing.
The neon sign that James Shields brought into the locker room, I guess.
Yeah, they're like, oh, let's do this.
This is what we're doing now. Why every time we win,
because we're doing it.
Okay,
yeah, completely manufactured. It's kind of like those 3 months in 2015 where we tried to give Kendrys Morales a nickname,
oh.
And like nothing stuck. It's like sometimes things just aren't meant to happen.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't force it if you don't need to, you know?
Yeah. Some things are just organically great, and some things, you know, A1 for Alex
Gordon, happened.
Country Breakfast.
You know, KMO, it works well enough for Kendrys Morales at the time, you know?
Don't push the envelope too far. It falls off the table.
It's true. That's a very...
You don't have an envelope.
Very apt analogy.
Like, sure.
So that's kind of the Royals happenings, you know, and we can discuss it for today, but something that, you know, with Gordon and Soler, we talked about some kind of bright spots to look at, but one of the things that's been kind of disappointing for me specifically, and I only say that meaning like, I don't know that everybody is disappointed, but I know a lot of people are, is the performance of Danny Duffy. And you know, you look today, even he pitched today, and we give up 4 home runs, 3 alone to Mookie Betts. So, you know, he just hasn't had it this year. And there's been lots of speculation. You know, his velocity has ticked down quite a bit. It's the lowest it's ever been in his career. His average velocity for his fastball, you know, is it something where he's hurt and it's one of those kind of nagging things that's not enough for them to truly take him out? But then, you know, at the end of the season, they'll say like, oh, well, he was really hurt all year. They probably should have sat him. It's like, well, why the hell didn't you sit him, you knuckleheads? Like, I always love that. Well, nobody realizes that he was playing hurt all year. Well, then don't play hurt. Like, right, what the hell are you trying to accomplish? But anyway, you know, there's been some speculation to that he could be possibly injured in some way, and it's hampering his ability to pitch. And I don't know. It's certainly possible because it's kind of searching for reasons for why he's just not pitching the same way that we're used to. with him. He's walking a lot of batters, more than he's walked on a per nine basis for the last few years, you know, since before his Tommy John surgery. So it's very disconcerting to see what he's been doing, and today was no better. I mean, he's got a 5.4 ERA. He hasn't lasted very long. Let's pull up his game logs. I don't know that he's pitched past the sixth inning yet this year. He's pitched
38 innings and seven starts.
31.2 innings. He's got. Counting today. How far did he get today? Again,
six innings.
Yeah.
Innings.
So
6.2.
So yeah, he's made six innings twice, but then the other times he's had a couple games where he hasn't even made it out of the fifth inning. So, you know, I don't know. It's been that's been really disappointing, and we keep saying, you know, that even as good as Duffy's been the last couple of years, there was that kind of extra gear, extra notch that we all knew was there, and that we were hoping, you know, it's possible he can take that step. He can take that, you know, put himself on that next level where he can become a top tier pitcher in baseball. He's got that ability. We've all seen it. Everyone knows it's there, but he just hasn't been able to put it together on a consistent enough basis. And, you know, that's one thing, but then completely just not putting it together at all, seemingly this year. I mean, he's had a couple okay outings, but other than that, he just has not done very well. And, you know, it's been kind of disappointing. It doesn't seem that he's really showing a ton of signs that he's going to come out of it. He's given up 10 earned runs in his last two starts, last 10 innings. So I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with Danny Duffy.
Yeah, and I think today is kind of appropriate the way the game went. You know, if you look at how it went on even opening day. Opening day, he kind of cruised through the first three innings, looked good, looked solid. Today, gave up three runs in the fourth, gave up another two home runs to Mookie Betts, and, you know, left with his team behind. I mean, I don't think they've won a start of his yet. And, yeah, he's had a couple of games where he's pitched pretty well, and he's had a couple of games where he's pitched okay, but he's got a couple of those blow-up games where, you know, opening day, like I said, three home runs in that game and four home runs today. You know, the control has kind of been spotty in some of the early innings and other starts. So, and the velocity's been down and you know, more starts on top of all that. So it's just like a lot of different things kind of disjointedly kind of flailing about. And he hasn't really put it all together with control, the stuff, the velocity, you know, in more than maybe two starts so far. And that's going to be difficult. You know, it's hard enough when the offense wasn't scoring runs earlier, but it's even harder when, you know, you don't have command of all of your pitches and your fastball is, you know, a mile or two below what you expect it to be at. And so, yeah, that's going to lead to a lot of inconsistency. And you can tell, I mean, he spoke after the game and you can tell he's very frustrated by it. But, you know, I don't know what you can do other than just try to make adjustments to that and see what kind of works out and see what you can piece together. You know, because, I mean, they're going to rely on him. He's about a fifth of the way through what he's going to do this year, start-wise. So far, that first 20% has not been that great. So he's got to figure something out. And, you know, hopefully that puts him back into the range where he's missing bats. You know, he's not walking guys. He's not giving up deep counts. So he's going deeper into games. He's not giving up home runs. You know, that's just a killer. You know, solo home runs, yeah, they're only one run, but you give up three of them and you give up another two-run homer, and, well, it's pretty tough to do a lot, you know, when you're already needing to score six runs to win. It puts your team in a pretty big hole. So, it is disappointing. He's, you know, I'm sure he's going to have a stretch where he kind of gets it going, but it's consistency. And that's what he's going to need to be the top guy in the rotation. And so far, that just hasn't happened.
No. No, it hasn't. And they, you know, if they're going to, and we talked about if they're going to salvage much from this season, whatever that means, you know, if they're going to salvage much, we talked about Jorge Soler and Alex Gordon being good signs that they could, and that they're going to need both of them if they are. Well, they're going to need Danny Duffy if they are as well. So, you know, if they want to avoid that talk of worst worst start in Royals history, et cetera, or worst record in Royals history, then that's part of it. You know, Danny Duffy has to come out of this and has to just start pitching better. So it's, you know, easier said than done, obviously, but it's a it's unfortunate. You know, I mean, we've all been behind Danny Duffy and want him to succeed. And if he is injured, you know, that sucks. I really hope they take him out and let him heal up. But, you know, there's no real, like, leader on this staff right now. You know, I mean, Jacob Junis is pitching very well, and he's looking great. He's got a 3.29 ERA so far with six starts. So he's looking great, but he's young. You know, this is his kind of first full season as part of this rotation. So he's not really the leader guy that's kind of sets the tempo for the rotation. That was supposed to be Danny Duffy, or maybe you say Ian Kennedy can be that guy. And Kennedy's had a solid start to the season. So he's, you know, but he's, he's still not that guy. You know, I think everyone was expecting Danny Duffy to be that person, and he hasn't been. So, you know, they just kind of look, as a starting pitching staff, it's kind of listless right now. You know, you've got, like I said, Jacob Junis and Ian Kennedy both pitching pretty well, and everyone else is just, you know, not pitching all that great. And, you know, we've talked about the bullpen and their issues. So, you know, those continue. Yeah. But and if they don't get any help from the starting pitching, then man, it's going to be a long, long season.
Yeah, I remember some of those years where, like, oh God, who were some of the relievers that the Royals would bring in? I can't even think of their names. Geez. Now. But I just think of July games in 2007, sun beating down a million degrees out, and this guy just can't throw strikes. And then they bring in a new guy, and that guy can't throw strikes. And the Royals are just getting pounded, and just bullpen's doing a little better now, though. I mean, some of the guys, you know, Blaine Boyer he's got like five innings pitched without giving up
That's
a run
true.
Now. He got a save.
A real live one.
Like a real save. Like a real, it's in the stat book and everything. It's like a legit statistic.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe he can salvage something. Still, you know, not sure, but. Okay, fine. If he pitches well, I'm not going to be as annoyed with him making the roster. But guys like, you know, Brad Keller's pitching pretty well. Brian Flynn had a rough opening day, but he's pitched a lot better since. Kevin McCarthy had three scoreless innings yesterday. Calvin Herrera's pitched great all year despite, you know, giving up his first run of the season last night. Oh, no. You know, May 1st, he gives up his first run of the year. What tragedy. So some of those guys are starting to kind of work out. Tim Hill looks like he's got some nastiness. He's not very consistent yet. And same with Birch Smith. Birch Smith has looked really good in some outings and really, really rough in others. But I mean, those are guys that have some promise. Scott Barlow made his major league debut. He looked all right. They've got other guys down on the farm who might come up. Jason Adam is throwing like 97 right now. He's just throwing bullets. So he might be getting a look later. So, I mean, they've got some arms. And they've got some guys who are kind of starting to figure out, okay, here's how to kind of, you know, get through the day-to-day at the big league level. A lot of rookies, a lot of young players. But they're kind of starting to settle down a little bit. And that's, you know, I think giving Ned Yost and giving the rest of the team at least some sense of who they might go to in late inning situations. Yost seems to already completely fully trust Brad Keller, who's throwing like 95 with, you know, a little bit of a little sink on it. So that's pretty cool, you know, to kind of see some of those guys maybe figure it out a little bit more. That's going to be a big thing the rest of the year because you're going to see a lot of those guys kind of up and down as much as you can, other than the Rule 5 guys. And that's going to put the Royals in a position where they can take a look at a lot of young arms, see kind of who develops. And right now some of those guys are taking the opportunity and they're pitching well. And it's stabilizing the bullpen. And I don't think it's a surprise that the Royals have played marginally better, or at least it feels like they played marginally better for most of the last couple of weeks. So, you know, that's something to keep an eye on too.
Absolutely. So hopefully, you know, we kind of talked about it last week, how a lot of those bad Royals teams, you know, they weren't necessarily all bad, but the problem was they couldn't get all these different pieces working well at the same time. So, you know, if they had a good offensive game or the starting pitching was good, the bullpen would blow it. Or if they had a good game, a game where the starting pitching was bad, you know, they couldn't put up enough runs to win a shootout type of thing. So feeling like it's in that same territory now, you know, now that the bullpen is at least a little bit better and the offense is starting to come around, you know, starting pitching is still struggling. So, but, you know, starting pitching is still being, they've still had Jake Junis is still giving some good outings. Ian Kennedy, I mean, they did win 3 of 4 since we last recorded. Right. So we got to give them credit where it's due.
Can't take it away from them.
No, they certainly can't. So yeah, but I don't know. You know, I hope the pitching gets a little bit better, and you know, the Jason Adams stuff is really exciting. That could be to see him putting up those kind of numbers in terms of velocity. That's really cool. So hopefully, you know, that's for real, and he can come up and put that to good use for the major league roster at some point if they need him, which they will. So that'd be pretty cool. But I think that pretty much covers it. We got anything else this week? It's been kind of a light week.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. We saw Trevor Oakes make his big league debut. Mm-hmm. He started where we thought Clay Buchholz was going to start. That was surprising. But, you know, whatever. Eric Skoglin had a good start in his last game. He had 9 strikeouts, 1 walk over 7 innings. Maybe that's why they let Buchholz go. I don't know. But, you know, what we saw from Skoglin in his big league debut last year was really, really cool. But since then, he hasn't shown a whole lot. So, you know, hopefully this is maybe him kind of figuring some things out also, along with the guys in the bullpen. Because I see him on, like, everybody's prospect list. He's in, like, the top 10 or 15 or so. And I'm like, you know, I've seen what he's done at the big league level so far, and I'm just like, we kind of have an idea. We're starting to get an idea of what he is, but then he goes out and, you know, he's starting to miss bats now. So that's a neat development to kind of keep an eye on too. But yeah, that's about it. I mean, Raul Mondesi or Adalberto Mondesi, pardon to Mr. Mondesi. He homered yesterday leading off the game in his first game back, and he tripled today, I think, leading off the game also. So pretty good start. I don't know where he fits in once he gets up to speed. You know, maybe it's not until July, and the Dodgers are missing Corey Seager now, who had to have Tommy John surgery, so they could use a shortstop. I don't know if they would do much for Alcides Escobar, but you know, in a couple months, that could clear a path for Mondesi to come up. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I don't know. It's they played some games. It's about all they did. They had some wins. They lost some opportunities. Chester Cuthbert hit 3 homers in the last week. That's another thing. He's still his batting average is pretty weak, but you know, he's starting to get some power showing there. So that's comforting. So
yeah.
I don't know. That's kind of about it. I mean, it's just another week in paradise.
Just another week in paradise. Don't know that there's a better way to describe it.
3-7 the last 10 games.
Hey, better.
And that's optimistic.
Yes,
that feels good.
That feels really good, you know. So
crazy. What a year.
What a year indeed. So with that, we'll leave you. We'll be back next week, of course. Hopefully, maybe instead of 3 out of 4, we can get like a 5 out of 7 going, or, you know, 6 out of 8. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves, but, you know, these even blind squirrels find a nut every now and then. So, you know, they can, Royals can have put together a good week or so and be looking at that, but we'll see. We will see. Anyway, in between now and next week, always, as always, be sure to visit our sponsors, BP Kansas City. Got a lot of stuff going up there every single day. we have, you know, game recaps, and Craig just put an article talking about some of the, you know, offensive woes of the team. So it's very good stuff up there. Be sure to visit there to get all your Royals, your daily Royals knowledge, and
100% free.
Absolutely.
Cost of nothing.
Cost of nothing except internet connection.
Which you're paying for,
yes,
it anyway.
Exactly.
So, you know.
And Kelly's Westport Inn, one of our long-standing sponsor, who a big part of this show's success. Be sure to go visit them, especially as the weather gets nicer. Kelly's is an excellent rooftop deck. They have just a great atmosphere to be around when with great weather like this. So be sure to visit.
And they've got the Westport Block Parties coming up.
Oh, that's
up
right.
Too. That's at the end
that
of the month.
That is right. That's
May 27th.
It's always a Memorial Day thing.
So yep. Yep. Fun. It'll be Sunday at 8 o'clock. Tickets are available. You just go to westportkcmo.com or kellyswestportinn.com. Should be able to get them. I'm not sure if they're selling them at the bar also, but you could get them the same night. So, you know, they'll be going rain or shine. There's going to be music. There's going to be drinks. There's going to be food. So, should be a good time. So be sure to check them
absolutely
out.
So until then, do that as you're waiting with bated breath, I'm sure, for the next show to arrive. Visit our sponsors. So
I think next episode is number 100.
Hey-o.
With BP Kansas
Look
City.
Look at that. 100.
I don't know what number it is overall, because we've been doing the show since, you know, for 7 years.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. What a long, strange trip. So I don't know what actual number we're on, but I know that, you know, when we started at BP Kansas City, I made a definite effort to actually number them when we finished them, because I wanted to know milestones such as this. So episode 100, we're going to see if we can give you something a little different, maybe. Not much fanfare, because it's really probably like episode 517 and nobody celebrates episode 517 right. of anything. But, you know, it's whatever milestone we can make it. So we'll see what we can come up with and go from there.
Absolutely. So something to look forward to. And that is the next time that we will see you is next week. So thank you all so much for listening. We love you all. Couldn't do it without you. Love hearing from you, Twitter, email, all the rest. So if you have anything or any fun show memories that you wanna drop on us for to recollect about for our 100th episode, feel free. And we will see you next week. So until then, thank you all for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, and you drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Limitosis.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.